an odd one in the crowd.
So it's kind of odd.
They're decidedly odd.
Doesn't that strike you as a little bit odd?
No, that doesn't strike me as a little bit odd.
It's the Bob and Sherry Oddcast, with stuff we wouldn't, couldn't, or shouldn't do on the regular show. Now, here's the Oddcast.
So we're going to be joined by our friend, comedian and actress Nicole Birch, who we, she's been popping into happy hours since 2020 when the lockdown started. We're huge fans and we adore her. So she's going to pop in. So I posted something on my Threads account, but I haven't really talked about my daughter Olivia was in a car accident. And I'm just really thankful that she was not hurt. The car completely destroyed. And the insurance adjuster called me this afternoon. And he said, hi, you know, my name is Ryan, blah, blah, blah. I want to begin by asking, how is your daughter? Because I just got back from looking at the car. And I said, well, thank you, airbags, because she walked away. Like, she's rude. I mean, she took an airbag to the face, the chest, everything. She really shook up. So Olivia, I mean, if you're a regular listener, you know that Olivia was really late to drive. She was so anxious about driving that she just didn't want to. And so did not even get a permit till college. So she's only been driving for a few years. And you know that you're going to have something, right? But that phone call, man, you do not want that phone call. And I was so glad when we were in the car together and coming back from a doctor's appointment, and I hit accept and I heard, I was in a car accident. But the fact that it was my child telling me that she was in a car accident and not the police, I was immediately like, okay, you were in a car accident, but you're talking, so everything's probably fine, or it will be fine eventually someday soon. But yeah, it was a lot. It's been.
I was thinking, well, I thought this would have happened about a year ago.
I think we all did. And, you know, the insurance adjuster said to me, he said, I've rear-ended 3 cars in my life. And it changed the way I drive. The first one changed the way I drive. Like, I am so much more careful now than I ever was, because the sound, the impact, the airbag, the damage, like, totaled. But I have to say, this car.
Wait, hold on. He's done that 3 times, and the first one changed the way he drove. Then well, how come he did it 2 more times?
The second 2 were not his fault. It was chain reaction. He got pushed, like a whole bunch of cars got pushed. Okay. So Olivia was driving a 10-year-old Honda, and shout out to that 10-year-old Honda, because that girl walked away from that wreck. So yeah.
Nicole is down waiting, so let me pull her up.
Yeah, get her. Oh, Christy, you have 14-year-old girl boy twins and you're petrified for them to start driving? You betcha. Hey, Nicole, how are you?
Your mic is muted.
Hey.
Oh, there we go.
Girl, you look so glamorous. I can't even look at you.
Thank you. Oh my gosh, that story. I'm so sorry.
You're a mom, so your day. This is my husband, Kevin, by the way, Nicole.
Hi, Kevin. Hi, nice to meet you.
Nice to meet you.
I thought of you this morning. I'm like, oh, Nicole thinks that like diapers and teething and bad attitudes are rough. You would do anything to go back to those days once they start driving, I swear.
I know. I'm not excited for any of that. I mean, I'm already talking about not giving her a phone till she's 18. Or at least when she can't do social media on. So like even thinking about driving, which my dad started teaching us to drive at an early age because like they were always in logistics and stuff. And his whole thing was like defensive driving. But he put that in you so much that you're like, well, how crazy are people on the road? And then you get in your first accident and you're like, oh, this is what it's like.
So crazy. Like, the insurance adjuster who called me today, he said, he goes, yeah, I'm just real thankful that your daughter's okay. You know, we've had like 3 fatalities here in the last couple of weeks. Like a tractor trailer ran a traffic light and took somebody out. It's even if like this is what it's so hard to explain to your kids. And it was probably really hard to explain to us, right? It's not you I don't trust. It's not you I think can't handle it. It's just that once you put that blinker on and emerge into the road, you're in like a popcorn machine of crazy and poor attitudes and rage and distraction. It's not you. It's everybody else.
Well, no. In Olivia's case, I'd feel comfortable telling her that some of it's her.
Some of it's her. she didn't get a ticket. So thank God, like, we weren't, you know, breaking any laws. No speeding, no phone, no nothing. So, yeah.
Well, I'm just so curious. Like, that's interesting that you said that she had always had like a fear that she'd been putting it off since college and stuff. That's interesting.
Yeah. She just was phobic about it. And now her little sister, that girl couldn't, you know, that girl wanted to go to the DMV at 1 minute after midnight on her birthday. How old did you have to be when you were a kid to get a learner's permit?
I think 15. I think.
Yeah, that's like,
yeah.
You know, and to me, Nicole, because I'm the kind of mom, I was like, 15, are we really ready for big girl pants? Like, I just was not.
No. And I know each kid's different. But I'm also like, once you start doing certain things, like even small things, like once girls start shaving their legs, like you can't go back. Like you lose part of that innocence and now you're like thrown into the adult world. But with driving, it's like you're also thrown into the adult world with other adults on the road. That's crazy.
Who are just, you know, very often terrible. Like people, I mean, look at the way people act on airplanes now.
Yeah.
Like, it's just, folks, Roadhouse was just a movie. Like, we don't have to act it out in every public space. We do not need to carry on like this. We are so excited about Bob and Sherry Premium, well-marbled, juicy, and always fresh, with loads of behind-the-scenes photos and videos, exclusive content, including our classic chat room calls and our best-of CDs. And best of all, it's just $4.99 a month. BobandSherry.com/premium. So let's hear about your mom journey these days. Tell us, you have a new...
New comedy special called Mama Drama. It comes out this Tuesday, March 5th on Amazon and Apple TV. It's basically the story, and I've shared it with you and Bob and Heather before, but how I got pregnant. I got pregnant with a friend from one night together, and now we're co-parenting. Well, when I did the special, it was a three-year-old. Now she's four. And kind of that journey, and then going back into the world and dating, and then meeting my now boyfriend / fiance. The journey that was, in the roller coaster, the delivery, which was insane, it was probably my best, because my last special was just about one date I went on this one time, and it was a crazy story. This is more of like a 4-year amount, like, of time. And it's full circle, and like the moms that have that were in the audience, especially the single moms, I think it really resonated with, which was interesting. Cause I didn't think it would really resonate with the single moms as much as like the delivery stuff. And that when you have sleep deprivation, I tell a story about how I'm in my apartment. I can't find the baby. I'm by myself. I'm a single mom. I haven't slept in 4 days. Now I'm
on. Did you lose the baby in the actual apartment?
Lost the baby. So I'm on, this is just a little bit of the special I'm giving away, but I'm on the third floor of an apartment, and then the cars are in the subterranean garage below. So it's 4 flights of stairs, right? So I have a panic attack thinking I've left her in the car, and we all know those stories about the car, right? So I'm freaking out. So I go downstairs, check my Jeep. She's not in there. Breathe a sigh of relief, go back upstairs, look again. She's not, I don't see her anywhere. I'm freaking out. I go up and down the flights of stairs 4 times. So 4 flights of stairs, 4 times. By the way, we had a working elevator, but I haven't slept in 4 days. So I'm losing my mind, right? I get up, I call my mom. I'm like, Mom, I can't find the baby. I can't. But she's like, what do you mean you can't find the baby? I was like, I don't know where the baby is. And like, I'm screaming. My mom's screaming. She's like, what do you mean? Do we have to call the police? Like, what's going on? We're like, oh my God, I'm afraid. I was like, I can't find her anywhere. I haven't slept in 4 days. I don't know what's going on. And then we hear Everly coo. We hear her coo, the happiest little baby coo. And I go, oh, I mean, I was checking the freezer, the dog bed. I was checking everything. And my mom goes, where was she? She was strapped to my chest in a baby.
You had gone up and down.
Up and down, up and down. Didn't look down. Not once. She was only like 2 months old, so she was like really snug. And I'm like, my mom's like, you need to get some sleep, girl, because this is, I mean, that's, I think I'd gotten, it was 6 hours of sleep in 4 days.
Oh, I remember those days.
It was bad. And so like the fact that I did that, thought I lost the baby, and she was strapped to my chest the whole time. Like insane.
Look at the comments though. Look at what Alicia Kurzer said. She said, I lost my 4-year-old due to sleep deprivation. She was in the bathtub. I started the bath and put her in it and then couldn't remember where she was. Like that, call it whatever you believe, a guardian angel. We all have some magical force field of protection. When you think about, again, like there is nothing like day after day after day of no sleep make you absolutely nuts.
Crazy. Just randomly. And part of me thought it was hormones. And you know, I know you're still balancing out after you have a baby for sure. But I'm like, oh, when I would get 6 hours sleep during that first like 3 month period, I felt so well rested and grounded. But then that next night when you're getting 2 hours, I would just stand in the grocery store just bawling my eyes out at checkout. No, I had no reason to be crying, just weeping. And you're going, oh, I remember they're like, why would somebody leave a baby in a hot car? And I'm like, I totally, after having a kid, and not to excuse that or anything, because I don't also think any parent's doing that intentionally, but you're kind of like checked out. Like your brain has to like unhinge every now and then, you know what I mean? Like, or disconnect.
Human beings, that's why sleep deprivation is a torture interrogation technique. Human beings have to have sleep. When my girls were, so my oldest daughter was 2 when my second daughter was born, and I didn't have maternity leave with either of my girls. Like I work in radio. So I literally had the baby, dusted it off, and was back on the air. Literally.
Oh my God.
It was so deranged. So my little one had colic. That's a good time.
Oh,
where's all my colic parents? What? No. Whoa, that's a good time. So I am recovering from a C-section. I'm working with a weekend between giving birth and returning to work. I had the weekend to get myself together. I've got a 2-year-old who is Count Dracula. The child didn't sleep until middle school, like literally did not sleep until middle school, and would get up in the middle of the night and go host her own cooking shows in the kitchen with like sharp knives. It was terrifying, right? And then the little one had colic, and at night, like colic babies, they can tell time. They're like cats. They know when it's time to eat. They know when it's time to scream. That child would cry and scream inconsolably for a couple of hours. And after the third day of it, the 2-year-old would just burst into tears too. And I just went, I guess that's who we are now. And I would burst into tears and the 3 of us would sit and cry.
Oh my gosh.
And then I would get the baby would finally stop crying. And I'd get my 2-year-old to bed and I'd nurse the little one back into sleep. And then I would sleep for, you know, 90 minutes or so before it was time to feed again,
Yeah.
No, and then I would get up and go to work in the morning in a radio station where some jackweed middle manager would say something to me like, are you telling me you didn't watch the People's Choice Awards last night? Are you telling me you want to die without telling me you don't want to be murdered? Like, no, I didn't watch the People's Choice Awards, you bag of dicks. No. Oh my God, I'm barely alive. Here's my choice for you people. Like it was crazy. So yeah,
I cannot believe you went back to work that fast. The thing I will say about breastfeeding, like, you know, when people say it's the best thing for it is sure. Like, chemically for sure. But at a certain point I had like 4 lactation specialists. I wanted to try so hard, but along with my mother, so I think it might be genetic. We did not have supply. So I would be like, well, I just have to pump more, which means you're pumping, you're feeding. So you're doing like every 90 minutes, you're doing something.
Yeah.
And so when he thought that you could watch the People Choice Awards, like what, that's a dude who's never, you know, or somebody, even if, you know, a lot of moms on, somebody will post that they're bottle feeding their baby, and the women that are like, you know, breast milk is better.
Breast
it's like,
is best.
Well, you have no idea. And also at a certain point, like I was done at 4 months against my will. Like I had no say in the matter, but people don't understand the reason they created formula in the first place was because 10% of women didn't have full production or couldn't breastfeed. Like there's a reason why formula is out there. And because like even the rich people had wet nurses, right? So it's like, that's not what it was.
That's the other thing. Like in those debates on social media about breast is best. And what did women do in the olden days? Oh, they did a couple of things. They had a wet nurse. Mm-hmm. They had someone else in the village that had an ample supply and could nurse. Mm-hmm. They dipped a piece of cloth in sugar water and gave that to the baby. Yeah. Like show me that you've never read a book.
Yeah.
Cletus, because yes, this has long been the fact of life.
Yeah. I remember I was struggling. I think I was like, she was 2 months old. And I was like, we're already doing half and half like formula and breastfeed because I'm not giving her enough. And my cousin who had an extra freezer full of bags because she was producing so much. She comes over and she goes, oh, well, while you're staying here, because I was visiting my mom. She goes, well, you're staying here. Here's some bags for you. And I looked at them and I go, what are those for? And she goes, oh, for your extra milk. And I was like, what? What extra milk, dude? I've never made extra. Like, that's not a thing. I remember looking at them and I was like, oh, that's crazy. And then I watched a Netflix special called Unwell. It's a documentary. And one of the episodes talks about this woman who had, maybe somebody can comment if you know what it's called, but when somebody has like an extreme oversupply, it starts with an H, it's like hyper something, but like she had, you know, those like meat freezers in your garage or something that was full. She had another stand-up fridge that was just filled with breast milk. She would produce, I think she would produce like 6 gallons a day.
Oh my God.
Was donating them to hospitals for adopted babies or women who couldn't produce. So she was doing everything right. But one of the scenes, her husband's making himself a bowl of cereal and he goes, yeah. And he takes a pitcher of breast milk and he goes, sometimes we use it on our cereal too. And I was like, oh my God, you're feeding the whole thing. I was like, this is it was so much breast milk that I was like, this is making me angry, but I'm happy for her, but making me angry.
In Mama Drama, your new special, you talk about how a friend came over one night and you ended up with a baby.
Yeah.
And you guys were just friends, dear friends, obviously. Mm-hmm. And clearly he's a really good human because he's your friend and co-parent.
Right.
When you were pregnant and then you had her, did you have like any confusing feelings or
no?
Like
Yeah. So we get this question. Both of us get this question a lot.
Was he picked or was it a kind of, you know,
we weren't, I'll be honest. We just weren't careful enough is what it was. And I did not want kids. Well, not that I didn't want kids. I did not want to be a single mom. That was like, but then my therapist is like, sometimes we create what we fear most. And I'm like, okay, great.
That's my therapy is just so much. All that truth coming at you is really uncomfortable.
Well, because like I was raised by a single mom and I saw how hard it was and everything she had to sacrifice and do. And she was working all the time, man. I couldn't do sports. I couldn't do dance. I couldn't do any of that stuff. I would do it for like a year. And then she was like, I have to go to work in order to pay for this. So how do we do this? You know?
So true.
I didn't want to do that. So, and obviously we should have absolutely been more careful. Like there's no question about that, but we were the only, he was like 42 and I was 36 or he was 40 and I was 36 and we were the only single people in our friend group. Everybody else was together and him and I would flirt occasionally. We'd known each other for 7 years. We always hung out. We'd have lunches and just like talk about what dating's like. And then we were both going through a breakup and he called to check on me and I was like in a bad way. And he goes, well, I'm going to come over and bring dinner and make you feel better. And so one thing led to another. It was not the whirlwind romance. Heather's dying. Okay. It's so real. When I say this is another reason why I never had a second thought. And we've never had a conversation where it's like, should we try? Not once. He triggers things in me. I trigger things in him that it's just not, it's not sustainable. But that night was not a whirlwind romance. It was, I had two bottles of Chardonnay. He had two Coors Lights. We are on very different drunken paths. You know what I mean? He was absolutely sober. And I was like, woo! And he was like, oh my God, please don't throw up on me. Please do not throw up. So like, that's where I was. And the next day, I called him and I go, hey, so about last night, that was not, and he goes, no, that was not. I was like, okay, we should never do that again. And he goes, no, let's never do that again. And how do you feel about like keeping it between us? And I was like, I don't want to tell anybody. So we're like, okay, let's make a pact. We will never tell anyone ever that Nicole and Craig have had sex. Never. No one's ever going to find out. And then 3 weeks later, I was late and I took a test and I was like, we might have to tell a few people. So, and I talk about like, he was more of a, he was way less excited than I was. Something kicked in me. I don't know if it was hormones, but I was like, look, I'm 36, almost 37. I've had the best year of my life. I feel like if I don't go through with this, I'm spitting in the face of the universe. And he was acting. So I like took to it pretty quickly. I was like learning how to use a breast pump and installing a car seat. He was having a midlife crisis. He got a brand new BMW and three tattoos. So like he went the other way. And I, even in the special, I talk about his tattoos and I'm like, like they're all really sad. Like he was going through like it was like a clown and it's crying. One says eat the rich, which is something like people say. And then the rest of them were oh my gosh, the Debbie Downer, great musician, but the Smiths. You guys know the Smiths, right?
So oh like, my God, he got a Smiths tattoo.
Oh, you think he got one? Girl, he got more than one.
They're all such a cry for help. Such an obvious cry for help.
I was like, every appointment we'd go to, I'd see him, he'd have a fresh tattoo, and it would be like, oh, let the lilies burn on the field or something like that. Like, dude, are you okay? What's going on, man? And he's like, no, it's a good song. And I'm like, yikes, bro. So I will say this, and I'll say this because Bradley Cooper just came out. It just came out today that he said this. Bradley Cooper's daughter, I think his daughter's like, six, right?
Six, yeah.
And so he just came out and said, when she was first born, I was like, not that in love with her. Like, I knew that I would take care of her. I'd be responsible and all that stuff. But when people talk about, oh, I would kill for my kid or I would die for my kid, he goes, I did not feel that way. He didn't feel that way for 8 months. Craig was the same way. And he did not feel that way for 3.5 years. So those 3.5 years for me were very difficult.
Sure. Yeah, that's hard.
It's still fairly difficult, but I'm glad he was honest and I'm glad he would tell me. I mean, he didn't have to tell me as much as he told me, but I'm glad he was at least honest about it. And then he is kind of he's a curmudgeon and I'm like an eternal optimist and have vision boards and stuff. And his favorite quote, which is also a tattoo, is a Buddhist phrase, is a Buddhist phrase that says all of life is suffering. So, so like when people are like, did you guys want a date? I'm like, no, bro, no,
not so much.
I was reading Goodnight Moon. He was reading like, he'd come over for like 3 hours a week. And so I could take a nap. And I'm like, what book is he reading in there in the living room? And I'd go out there. He'd be reading like Frederick Douglass, The Emancipation of an American Slave. And I'm like, she's 2 weeks old. What are you talking about? Please don't read to her about plantations right now. Okay. I get that like American history is important, but like she's 2 weeks old. So like when she would come home, I felt like I had to give her a palate cleanse because she'd be like, you know, like kind of a Debbie Downer stuff. And so one day he tells me, this is also in the special, but one day he tells me, oh, Everly's new favorite song when she's with me on the weekend is it's a Beach Boy song. And the look on my face, Sherry, I was like, what? Because the Beach Boys are very peppy and very like go lucky. And, you know, I was like,
well, unless it's Pet Sounds.
Wait. So I go, well, oh my God, I love the Beach Boys. Which one is it? Is it Help Me Rhonda or Kokomo? I love Kokomo or Good Vibrations. And he goes, no, it's a song called In My Room. And I go, you know what? I'm not familiar with that. So I went home and I listened to it. It sounds like a death march. It was written by Brian Wilson when he had agoraphobia and wouldn't leave his house. So he wrote a song called In My Room. And now my kid comes home and she's singing it all day long. And I'm like, this is what is happening. It's
great. You know what? So, okay. So here's something that I really believe is that, there, you know, there's only one doorway through which each of us can enter the world. Yeah. There's just that one doorway. And it's timed to the millisecond because that egg was your daughter.
Yeah.
And the door was opening. And mm-hmm. the only way to get that door open and get her into the world was to bring two people together who would not be together. And so we needed to call on our good friends at Kendall Jackson to supply two bottles of Chardonnay so that would help open the door.
It was Kendall Jackson.
It wasn't KJ, was it really? So yeah, like that is something I am really, really tight with Kevin's first wife, the mother of his four children. She's like my sister. I love her so much. And we talk about how, like, you have no idea, even sitting here right now, none of us have no idea what's coming next, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
But certain things feel like, oh, that was supposed to happen. Because even as you're like strapping her to your chest and then losing her, right?
Yeah.
You probably look at her now and think, I was thinking I was going to have a life without you.
Yeah.
What was that?
Yeah. And oh my gosh, some people ask me like, do you think it was a mistake? If you could go back, I wouldn't go back. I wouldn't change anything. I've never resented her. And I will say this, I always say this, having a kid is so expensive. I went from like six figures to food stamps, thanks to the pandemic. So, yeah. And that's not something and I hate to admit that, but no, like there was no work during the pandemic. I couldn't tour. I couldn't even go back to a bartending job. I couldn't even get any writing gigs because nobody was hiring me. And then the people it was just at the 6 month point, I was like, oh, I thought I had a handle on this and I could do it. And now I have to ask for help. And wasn't for very long, but coming out of that, it had taught me humility. It had taught me a lot leaning into gratitude and kind of coming out of that and like figuring out different ways to come out of that. And so I'm really glad that we did.
How old is she now?
She's 4 and a half. So I look at that and I think, man, I had a European tour lined up that was going to start May of 2020. Not obviously. Oh. And by the way, that tour, I had an au pair that they were going to pay for. So I could have taken her with me. And for 4 months, I was like, I'm set. Single motherhood is going to be a breeze compared to what some people have to go through. And then it was like, hey, here's a global pandemic. And her dad only has her like 5-10% of the time. And there's no money coming in. There's none. So, and at the time before, when I got pregnant, I think I was making over six figures. And it was like
to zero.
Yeah. To zero. And so I think that has taught me a lot. I also don't put a lot of value on money the way I used to, where it's like, I got to grind. I got to get this. I'm kind of like, we're always going to be okay. We're going to lean into gratitude. I'm always going to provide for you. You're always going to be safe. Mommy always knows what is in your best interest. And I'm going to follow through with that. But I also look back and the life I thought I was going to live, like if you're going to be this Chelsea Handler and you're always a single and you're always like, screw them kids and you're, which is great. And that's a lot of female comedian shtick and I get it. And that's what I wanted. I now have in an ego-centric, career-driven way, I have a whole different platform now. I'm less raunchy. I tell more detailed stories that are more specific to other people. I'm like, would I have been telling dating stories in my 60s? like, hey, I'm still dating on Tinder. It's still rough out for a girl. And it's like, well, so no. And so I'm really, she has changed my life in every facet, both personally, emotionally, but also career-wise, where it's like, oh, this is a way better special than I had. And not that I love what I did in 2020, but this is a professional, well put together, well curated, well written, and like, because it's from my soul, that I think that it's also super relatable. And like, if you are a single mom and you are struggling, or if you're just a mom and you're not getting sleep and you're struggling, this too shall pass. It's like, but then also you, again, like you experienced this week, you will always bleed and die for your children. Like your whole life has changed forever.
Last really hyper personal question. How does Matt get along? How does Matt, the fiance, get along with Craig, the co-parent? Yeah.
So I talk about this in the special when they met for the first time. And I built it up in my head where I was like, they're going to love each other and they're going to exchange numbers and they're going to be like, hey, let's group effort this. It'll be great because Matt will be able to see that there's no love lost between Craig and I, and Craig will see that Matt isn't trying to take over as a parent, but that he's really good with Everly. And I was like, I can't wait for them to meet. And it took some time because Matt, we met in Dallas. And so he was flying out every other weekend. And then Craig travels for work. So it took us like 3 months for them to meet. And it was Craig's weekend. So Matt and I went to go pick up Everly. And I thought, this is the moment it's going to happen. We're all going to get on a group thread. We're going to have ideas about soccer and maybe piano. Oh my God, this is going to be great. And they looked at each other, shook hands and said, hey man, what's up? Hey. That was it. That was the exchange. We got our daughter and we left. Like that's, so they get along fine. And like, they both respect each other. And I talked to Craig and Craig likes Matt and Matt likes Craig. Like it's great. And like Matt would never say anything bad or like, he's always devil's advocate if I get frustrated, which isn't often, but yeah, they're just like, hey man, what's up? That's it. There's no, like I built it. So
we're not best friends. We're not going to be bros.
That sounds normal to me.
Well, yeah. I will tell you, I've never talked about this on the show, but my children's father. So Kevin is, he's very chatty with me, but he's like the strong silent type, right? Like he just doesn't have a lot to say. Doesn't do a lot of small talk. I mean, clearly, right? Yeah. So this is years ago. My children's father comes to me and he goes, how come Kevin's mean to me? And I was like, I don't think he's mean to you. I just, you know, he's just not a real chatty person. So I said, Kev, can you work on that? Because he thinks you're being mean to him. Kevin was like, what grown man says that about another grown man? Like, what are we supposed, are we, what are we supposed to braid each other's hair? Like, what are we supposed to do? I think it's so different because like Kevin's.
So then she makes me go sit on the damn couch for 3 hours at the
and watch,
and watch
Olympics
the damn Olympics
them.
While she goes and fixes another family crisis.
Yeah. I'm like, he thinks you're mean. Go sit and watch the Olympics with him. And Kevin's like, that's when I knew Kevin loved me though. That was the moment. Like you can say like, girl, I love you. And here's some jewelry. But when he'll go sit with your ex-husband and children's father and watch the Olympics for 3 hours, that's actually true love.
Oh, I got 100 of those.
But it's different with women because Kevin's ex and I are like, you know, we just tell each other everything. And she's like a second mom to my daughters. Like we're super tight. But you know how men are. They're like, that's a conversation.
He's dated a couple girls and like immediately I'm like, yes, love you. Let's do this. Cause if my kid's going to be in your presence, we need to get to know each other. And then all of them have been really great. Like he has, you know, he's got good taste in like relatable girls that aren't, you know, bitchy, that are like pretty grounded. And so like, one of them I've become really good friends with. And so I think it is just different for women because also him and Craig and Matt are total opposites. They're just two different people. And Matt is also the strong silent type. So he doesn't have a lot to say. He's also a homebody. He just likes to putter around the house where like Craig's more like, let's go out, let's socialize. And so it's just very different. Yeah. So
we don't have hormonal problems and stuff like that when we're single.
Oh, yeah.
All my hormonal problems started when I got married.
Rational. Just always logical, you know, just always making decisions based on pure reason and nothing
else. Love.
Yeah. I will say that it is different with women because I adore my children's father's wife.
Yeah.
I was texting her pictures tonight. Like, I love her and I'm crazy. Like, Joni, his ex-wife, is like the sister I never got to have. But yeah. I think that as women, I don't know whether we're socialized this way or it's biological, but like, you're with my children and I want to know you. I'm with your children. Don't you want to know me? Like, yeah. Don't you want to know who's with your kids? Yeah.
Like, whenever there's like a news headline where it's like the stepmother did something to the kids to spike, I'm like, oh no, we're going to be best friends. And I want you to know that I'm always on your side, but I also want you to know I will murder you. If necessary.
Like, I reached out to Joni early on. We were going to take the boys. We were taking the two youngest and Carmine and Olivia on a spring break trip. And I reached out to her and said, hey, whatever your rules are, I'm going to follow them.
Yeah.
Just because it's, you know, when they're at our house, you're still mom, right? And that's the kind of thing. That's the kind of thing you hope for as a mom. And I just firmly believe that you should put into the world whatever the hell it is you're hoping to receive back. You might not get it.
Right.
But at least put it out into the world. It sounds like you're doing that.
Yeah, absolutely.
Tell everybody where they can watch Mama Drama.
Okay. It's on Apple TV or Amazon. You can go to my Instagram at Nicole Birch Comedy, and there's a link where you can pre-order it now. But yeah, it's Apple TV and Amazon. It's called Mama Drama. So
Mama Drama, Apple TV and Amazon. Nicole, come back on soon, okay?
Because I will. Thank you so much. I always love playing with you. Thank you so much.
We love having you. Cheers. Mama Drama, Apple TV and Amazon. There's your weekend. You're covered. So thank you for being with us tonight. Thank you, Nicole Birch.
Bye.
Thank you so much for listening to the Oddcast, Talking Lamar, and the Bob and Sherry podcast. We would love it if you would subscribe, rate, and review, and share it with a friend on Facebook, Instagram, wherever you go. And thank you again so much for listening.